Hello, I'm James Sandy, and this is the New Curiosities Box, a special programme giving you a slice of wonder and a cloud of zest from this year's Bee Festival 2018. Bee Festival, hosted at the Birmingham Repertory Theatre, is an annual creative dynamic aiming to bring the soul of Europe to the heart of Birmingham through theatre, dance, circus, music, visual art, and importantly, food. With a theme set on borders, boundaries, and limitations, this year's programme lit up the box through a challenging and engaging host of performances. First up, Kulu Orr invites us to consider the world of technology, music, and uncertainty through Control Freak, a hybrid of circus performance, multimedia snapshot, and audience entrapment. I caught up with the French performer as the circuit boards cooled and the duct tape unravelled.
Kulu, you've just finished a performance of Control Freak.
Yes.
Which I have to say was fantastic.
Thank you.
Well done, you. And you said, I think, right at the end, it was the first time that you'd performed it in English.
That's true.
And you did very well. That wasn't noticeable, so well done.
Thank you.
Now, to folks listening to the show, it's very difficult to describe what you do, but it's a kind of mix in some ways of, I guess, circus performance and a bit of sort of computer gadgetry trickery. How would you describe it?
I would say that I invent and construct musical instruments that can be played in various ways, among them circus skills. For example, I have computerized surfaces that I can bounce balls off of and create music, or I can do real-time, like on-the-fly video editing, skip the video to different bits and sound different notes from the video and compose music that way. And everything I play, I also have loop stations that I can record in real time and overlay layers and create real compositions.
And these are all things that you've made yourself. You've
yes.
conjured these things up many hours, I imagine a hobby at a young
hours?
Age.
Hours? Try years.
Years, okay.
17 years I've been working at it, yes.
So how did you come to that? Was it just, how did that idea hit you in terms of using that as a performance piece?
Wow, it was very gradual. And the first time I wanted to perform with, to combine my two passions of music and circus, it was acoustic. I mean, I had these different sized wooden cubes that I bounced balls off of, like a xylophone kind of, and it sounded terrible. And after a lot of experimentations and a lot of failed prototypes, I decided to go digital. So everything I needed, I just taught myself, including juggling, including music, electronics, computer programming, video editing, whatever.
You make it sound so simple, but they're always really difficult things, I think, aren't they?
I don't know. It depends on the level. Yeah. I mean, my advantage, I think, is that because I combine a lot of things, I don't have to be really good at any one of them. Like I'm not the best juggler in any festivals I go to. I'm not the best musician. I'm not the best video editor. I'm not the best computer programmer. But being a jack of all trades, you can offset that by synthesizing the things.
They kind of take on their own life, don't they? You've got a mixed
That's
together.
How, you know, I confuse the viewer all the time, so he doesn't notice that I'm not so good. That's the idea.
Now let's talk a bit about the audiences in terms of audience response.
Yes.
I think there was a definite rapport with the audience. People very quickly warmed to your persona, I guess. There's a kind of, it kind of reminded me of South Park in some ways, your character, you know,
uh-huh.
the kind of Kenny character, the kind of hooded sort of
uh-huh.
Unknown but lovable character.
Mm-hmm.
But you were a bit harsh with some of the people that came up on stage. And there was one particular lady who did struggle a bit with your sort of gadget-laden hats.
Yes. A bit. You're being very generous.
But how have audiences responded? Is it something that people are readily sort of engaged with, or is it taking people a time?
Actually, that lady, I was kind of guilty because I needed four volunteers and only three volunteered. And her, I just pulled out of the audience. And obviously, she wasn't really into it. I was hoping that she will...
She was a wild card.
Yes.
That's what they would call it, I guess.
But, as you could see, it has its advantages. I mean, she was the funniest one. I know I'm kind of a jerk, right?
A lovable jerk.
Exactly. Like, yeah. I'm a jerk, not in the sense that I'm evil, but I'm just... My character is kind of an Asperger, socially dysfunctional character. So when it encounters someone who is not functioning according to his expectations or demands, he tries to fix them like you would move a piece of furniture that wasn't in place. So it's not that I'm evil, I'm just really, really not nice. and it's really funny to be not nice in a way that is very unacceptable in society. That's why I chose this character, because it can be really incongruent with you know, how things should be done.
Let me ask you about some of the music that you chose to perform as part of the piece.
Yes.
There were some classical pieces in there.
Yes.
And there was Ode to Joy at one point, I think. Which,
yes.
Is that right? Which is the anthem of the European Union. And I wonder if you were being playful with a certain problem that this country might have.
I would love to say that, but I didn't know until 5 seconds ago that it was the anthem of the European Union.
Well, there we are. Feeling Good as well, which I guess was a Nina Simone song, but Muse, famously, I think, made it a kind of rock hit. Were those things that you were listening to as you were making these gadgets, or were they tunes that perhaps lent themselves to that kind of physical performance?
I think that question is kind of akin to asking, do the words or the music come first? The answer is yes. Yes, the words come first. Yes, the music comes first. It depends, because sometimes I tailor a whole piece around a certain song, and at a very advanced stage, I realize that it's just... It's not gelling, you know, it's not the right song. So I change the song, and that triggers a whole chain reaction of changes. So it's an infinite process, like Pachelbel's Canon.
Mm-hmm.
It
yes.
used to be Guns N' Roses.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm talking about really radical shifts here. What really attracted me in all the pieces is to have some kind of, I don't know how to say, juxtaposition or some, they don't lend themselves naturally. Mm. They're not like rock anthems, you know? Mm. And actually some of them are downright sad songs, like Californication or Feeling Good, I think it's not, an upbeat song. And to take, or Blackbird. Blackbird, for example, is a song for a guitar and a tapping foot. And it's, if you listen to it, you see that the meter keeps changing, like Paul McCartney. It's a horrible song to play with a loop station. It's actually impossible to play with a loop station because the meter keeps changing. And that's exactly why I chose it, because I said, okay, if I want to do something, like one of my least favorite things is to listen to the radio and hear a cover song that sounds almost like the original. Mm. Okay, so what did you add to the universe, you know? The original was already there and it's good, so... what are we doing here? So it's much better to take something that's really different than what you're trying to get it to be.
And just finally, obviously the piece is entitled Control Freak.
Yes.
It must be, you look pretty cool on stage. It struck me that you could...
I think
you kind of were in control of everything. Even at those points where you think, you know, that plank was going to fall off the last spinning spindle. But... And what I was going to say is, have there been moments on stage where you thought, oh, that's not working, or oh, that's going to cause me problems, or, you know, in sort of building the, refining the piece, have you had many sort of trials and tribulations?
You're asking as if it's in the past, but actually this evening, I think if you're thinking that Control Freak is named after my mental status, I think the name should have been changed to Nervous Wreck. I mean... at any given point in the show, 80% of my brain is just running all over the place, hysterically saying, okay, this is not working as it should, I think. Let me see, I'll do this, and then I'll see, okay, if it's not working, what am I going to do? Like, all the time. It's like kind of a chess game. I keep calculating 5 steps ahead. If it's not going to work, what am I going to do? It's a horribly stressful...
You seem to be coping with it quite well, though, I think, the stress.
I'm a really good liar.
You're a really good liar. Okay, so I'm with Sharon and Roslyn, and we're trying to hold the bar up, I think, as best we can. Sharon, let's start with what have you seen so far at Bee Festival?
Almost nothing. I've just arrived.
You've just appeared.
Yes.
Is this your first night?
This year. I went to one maybe a few years ago, but I don't really know much about it. So I'm here with Ros and my husband. And Ros invited me along, and it sounded interesting.
So are there particular things tonight you're looking forward to, or is it a bit of an unknown?
It's a complete unknown, and I really like that. I love theatre, so I absolutely love theatre. So any kind of theatre event, I'm there. And it's just a really nice space. I like the lights, I like the vibe, I like the music, and it all kind of sort of leads you to think that this is going to be something quite special happening.
Building momentum,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Rosalind, let's come to you. It sounds like you're the kind of the provocateur here. It sounds like you've been forcing people to come along.
Absolutely. I come every year, and I've been to... I was here on Wednesday, so this is my second time this year. Yeah.
How's it changed? You obviously came on Wednesday, is it different every year, or is it...
Yeah, it's changed a lot since it's been at the Rep rather than A.E. Harris, but the energy is the same. Lots of youngish performers coming from Europe and sharing the talents and the random nature of it, not really knowing what you're going to get.
So on Wednesday, I was here on Wednesday. What did you see on Wednesday that kind of made you think, whoa?
The third thing that I saw was three rooms and about people who can't get visas and the whole kind of refugee crisis. And that I found really, really moving, to the extent that I missed it. I didn't go to the fourth event. I kind of just wanted to sit with what had come up for me in that third one. So that was a highlight. It was sad, but it was a highlight.
It was very interesting the way that, I mean, I sat there thinking, is this part, you know, is the kind of Skype issue disconnection part of the piece?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it was a bit clunky, and maybe it was intended to be clunky. Who knows? But I think it was effective.
You go to see the Fear of Missing Out, the FOMO performance?
I did.
What did you make of that? Because I've had really, really, really
didn't like it. But I imagine there'd be people that did. I thought it was shocking, and sometimes shocking accomplishes something, but I thought it was shocking and it didn't.
I found it a little unsettling and a bit challenging.
Yes.
And I can see where you're coming from, because. It was quite forthright in how it presented it, let's put it that way.
I don't know if the shocking bits, there was a lot of nudity, wasn't there? I don't know. And the vomit, I don't know really whether that was necessary or whether that was artistically clever.
Whether it was necessary.
Yeah.
So just finally, have you come for the dinners as well? You had the dinner on the stage?
Yes, and that's lovely as well, meeting different people and all sitting on the stage and being in the auditorium, but you're having dinner. That's just really interesting.
You do meet some very interesting characters, I have to say.
You do.
And sometimes you become a character yourself, I think, as well. You have to be careful of that.
It's already happened to me.
We've just had the move towards the studio warning, so I shall let you proceed.
Okay.
Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you.
Nice talking
to you,
James.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
I'm James Sandy, and you're listening to a special edition of the New Curiosities Box, capturing this year's Bee Festival 2018. You can find a host of information and more links at beefestival.org, or you can get in touch with the show at switchradio.co.uk/James Sandy. Now, to danger, drinking and rat traps. Take care of yourself, tested fear thresholds of audience and performer alike. Before I caught up with Swiss man of risk Mark Osterhoff, I had a quick chat with those relaxing in the bar. Again. Okay, so Tom, hi. I've stopped you, I think, from a warm beer, but you know, I'm sure there's a colder one coming. Is this your first Bee Festival? You've been here a few times.
This is the first time I've been here.
And what do you make of it all? You've been for a few days, or is this the first day? Or?
I've been here since Tuesday. I'm performing here.
Oh, you're performing?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. What are you performing?
I performed a show last night, a show called Someone Loves You, Drive With Care.
Ah, now I was talking to somebody earlier who said they really enjoyed that.
Oh.
That's good, isn't it? That's fortuitous.
That's all right, yeah.
So tell us about that show. What's the essence of that show?
The show is about exposing the operations of deception, and it covers, a show that attempts to expose different ways in which deception can work on stage.
And what made you choose that? What made you choose deception as a focus? Have you been deceived yourself a lot?
I've been deceiving people for a very long time.
You're a deceiver?
Yeah. I call myself a performance artist and liar.
Excellent. Yeah. So, and what was the sort of audience like for that? Did they receive that well?
From what I've heard and people I've spoken to, people have had very lovely things to say about it. The show itself has some moments in it that are kind of maybe a bit awful to see or kind of traumatizing to watch, but I think people kind of watch those and experience those in a kind of positive way, I suppose. But so, you know, some of the feedback can sometimes be like, oh, I didn't enjoy that, but they like the piece, if that makes sense.
Kind of made them think.
Yeah.
It's provocative. I think that's an important thing,
perhaps,
I think, sometimes.
Yeah.
So is that a show that you've developed to perform for Bee Festival, or is it something that...
So it's a show that already existed, but Bee Festival asked that all the shows that performed here are part of the competition are half an hour. So I re-edited it and cut it down from 45 minutes to half an hour for here. So it existed before Bee, but I've reworked it for this festival, yeah.
So you can kind of relax now, I guess, that you've had your sort of performance evening. And what are you looking forward to that's coming up tonight, tomorrow? Have you got anything in mind? Or?
So the next show, the first show that's on tonight, I can't remember the name of the show itself, but it also involves a kind of element of danger. Apparently the performer is putting their life on the line, and I've heard some very intriguing and interesting things, and we also spoke briefly earlier on today, so I'm quite looking forward to that because there's some similarities between our shows. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that, and yeah, that's the one tonight, I think.
There's a kind of theme this year, isn't there, about sort of boundaries and barriers and sort of containment, kind of, I guess, pushing containment a little.
Yeah, so the theme, I suppose, with regards to my work, it's about kind of sitting between boundaries of things being real or not, but also kind of common threads between the discussions is, and between the shows and things that generally have been talked about, kind of boundaries of there's been a lot of audience interaction and kind of how much the audience interact or intervene with things that are going on in stage, and that's kind of an interesting underlying conversation that's been going on throughout the festival.
I sat in the other night on the Fear of Missing Out performance. I don't know if you caught
that.
Yeah,
I did.
And there are a number of people who were kind of shocked, but they said they enjoyed it. They were kind of, it was enjoyed shock, which is a new phenomenon on me.
Right.
Is that something you caught? You saw that performance?
I wasn't... Personally, I wasn't shocked. I think also as someone who makes performance, I'm watching work and kind of things from that angle. So that... So my interpretation of what people might call shocking actions is maybe slightly different because I see the kind of mechanics behind that maybe in one way. But I can understand why people thought that, yeah.
Excellent. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll let you get back to your beer. But for now, Tom, thanks for your time. Thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm sitting in... Well, it's a shopping trolley, isn't it, really, I think?
With a shopping trolley.
Well, we would just say it's a lover's chair made out of a shopping trolley. So I'm with Mark, and Mark, I want to talk to you about Take Care of Yourself, which was your performance earlier on.
Exactly.
Which I watched kind of on the edge of my seat, because there was a lot of fear, I think. I was quite worried about what you might do.
Yeah.
But it struck me that you were very professional in how you did it. So... Just to set the scene for people listening, you were kind of challenging the idea of how risky things could get with a combination of alcohol and doing dangerous things. So you were playing with mousetraps and knives and various other things. So let's start with what we're trying to get to here. Is this about sort of testing people's fears and whether people want to confront danger, or?
Well, I think one of the first desire of this piece, it was because in the society we very often hear don't do this for safety, don't do that, watch out for this and that, be careful, doors closing, and I think there is this very, very strong thing now here all around us that is about to kill the self-responsibility of what we do, of our acts. And actually I really like danger for myself. I mean, I practice free running, and it's not always a dangerous thing, but it can be. And so I wanted to put myself under risk and to see what it will happen.
So some of the people I spoke to over dinner said to me, they said, what you should ask Mark is, what was he drinking? Was it whiskey? Was
yes,
it
whiskey.
Real whiskey?
Would you like any? Because I have the bottle right
I
here.
I can verify that. Yeah. I won't have any now.
Yeah, but sure.
I can definitely smell and verify that's real whiskey.
Yeah.
So part of the routine really was that when you failed to do something, you had a shot of whiskey.
Yeah, exactly.
Which obviously kind of impaired your judgment on some things. Some people said to me, were they real knives? And I thought, they were definitely real knives.
Yes.
They went into wood. Hard.
Yes, yeah, it is. But it's I'm in my free times, let's say, I train pretty hard on everything I do on stage. So I do knife throwing, I do back somersault and things like this. And it's really things that I can control very easily and in normal state. And so let's say that the alcohol just gives me a little challenge to go a bit further.
A challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly the backflips that you were doing, I would find challenging. I think, you know, kind of, you made it look effortless, I think. You know, it was
but it's really practice. I mean, if you would like to start to do backflips in 1 year, if that's really your goal in life, you would do backflips.
I could do it. Now, you also, part of the routine was sort of, I suppose, a kind of roulette, I guess, in terms of, you know, using a knife at speed to stab a block around your fingers, which is a trick I think I used to do at school with a pen.
Yeah, exactly.
And it hurt with a pen, but you had a very sharp kind of, I guess, a carving knife of some kind. So do you start with a pen or do you just go straight to the knife?
Yeah, no, I started with something made out of wood, and after I got good to it, so I took a knife. But it's everything is about training. It's about practicing. And if you practice something enough, you can do it even with alcohol, even with... Yeah, I think it's just a matter of practice. And after, I like to think that I do everything for the audience. So I practice in order to communicate something to the audience. So, well, yeah.
There was something as well, I think, about intuition, about kind of, you know, that almost, you almost had a kind of sixth sense for some things. So, you know, there was a bit where you were walking around the mousetraps and almost dancing around them, performing around them. Like you knew, well, you knew where they were, but you couldn't see them completely. Do you see what I mean? You kind of had this inbuilt kind of superpower. Is that just through training or is that the whiskey? I don't know.
It's a combination of both. because this very show, I had the opportunity to place the mousetraps where I wanted. But usually I perform the show just after another show. And so the mousetraps are really, really casually put. And so I have to improvise, let's say. But it's good. It keeps the mind really sharp.
Now, the stagehands, I noticed, when the show finished, removed the mousetraps with big brushes.
Yeah.
They were so scared to touch them. They were real live mousetraps. Not something you want to catch.
It's a rat
trap. It's a rat trap.
Yeah.
All right, even stronger, I guess.
Yeah, I got a bit scared when I thought that I will do something with rat traps because I put a carrot in one of them and it cut the carrot.
Oh,
they were like, ah, I really hope it's going to be okay with my little toes.
Now, there was something, I guess, playful about what you were doing as well. So there was a moment where, I think towards the end, you had a very large knife and you were standing on a chair and you had your foot on a block. And everyone's kind of reasoning was that you were going to drop the knife between one of your toes. And at that moment, the lights went out.
Yeah.
And the noise was like that. You know, everyone was like, oh, what's he done? Right,
yeah.
But very, very carefully, I think, you'd missed, which is good. Because, you know, you're smiling now and you've got 2 feet, which is...
Yeah, it's all right.
Which is good. But there was something there about testing, you know, the audience's idea of what's dangerous and what's risky.
Yeah, the danger and the representation of danger is really two different things. And so this thing, if I would do it in the street with people watching, they would be a bit scared because they would not know if I'm fast enough to react, to move my foot a little bit just before the blade would enter in the wood. But here on stage, with all these things happening before, of course there is this this attention of the audience that like raise and raise and raise. And so at the end, when I do this, it's like a climax, but actually it's really a matter of context. And so, yeah, I'm very happy if the context works. But the action itself is not so amazing, I think.
Now, just finally, one thing that struck me about the piece was the title. Okay, so everybody, I think, in the audience, hopefully, cared very much about what happened to you. Okay, they were very worried, me included. I was thinking, I hope this goes well, you know.
Yeah.
But also, I think there was something about, you started by saying, you know, people perhaps are a bit overcautious these days. They're kind of afraid to take risks. So there's a kind of balance there, isn't there?
Yes. I think it's also, I guess it's because my mother always tells me, take care of yourself when I go to practice. And
she's a wise woman, right?
Yes, she is. And so I always say this also to my friends when they do dangerous things, like take care. And I do take care of myself, even if I put myself into risk. I think it is pretty important to take care of ourselves anyway.
Excellent. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure sitting in a shopping trolley with a man with a backpack with whiskey
yes,
in it.
Is.
But Mark, thanks very much for your time. I really enjoyed the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. So I'm with Brandon, and we've just come out of Take Care of Yourself, which had me on the edge of the seat. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, it was one of those sort of shows that was kind of like, you didn't know where it was going to go with the experience of the actual performer themselves as well, if you know what I mean. But I don't know, he seemed a bit nervous, but towards the end he gained his confidence in what he was doing.
There were some very risky routines,
very, very
I think.
Risky, very, very risky.
Certainly when the carving knife fell and the lights went out, it was a bit of a kind of whodunit moment.
You know, like, it was one of those sorts of things, like, I don't know how it's going to end. Is his toe going to be still there at the end?
It was quite worrying. I think the setup initially, where there's lots of mouse traps and dangerous things lying around.
Definitely, especially when he was dancing around as well, over the mouse traps.
So I was just saying the other night as well, Wednesday night, I saw you taking part in Control Freak.
Control Freak, yeah.
And you had a musical hat on. Have you recovered from that experience?
That was a mad experience. I have.
Are there other things you've seen at a festival that you've really enjoyed that it made you think?
What quite got me was, I forgot the name of it, but it's where she covers herself in blood.
That was the fear of missing out.
Fear of missing out, yeah. Because it really felt like it connected with the youth as well, and the way the mentalities of people are with our generation as well. And I don't know, it just kind of opened my eye a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
There was a lot in it, I think, about people not really thinking about social media.
Yeah, definitely.
What they're uploading all the time.
Yeah, and also it kind of touched on a bit of almost Allegory of the Cave, where people are but narcissistic to one another, where they don't take other people's emotions as real emotions, so they believe themselves center of the universe, and it kind of just gave me a kind of a conceptual sort of like twist to it. Yeah.
And is this the first time you've been to B Festival, or?
You know what, it actually is.
It is,
yeah.
And you've been here for all of the days, or?
All of them except from yesterday and Monday.
Okay.
But I am going to be taking part in on Saturday.
Wow, what are you doing?
At the moment, we're doing some based around fear, but I don't know, this is my group over here.
So entourage. They're waving, look, they look happy, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So, Edwina, we were just watching Look After Yourself, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And what did you make of that?
I felt very nervous the whole way through. And at points didn't want to look, but it was really good. I'm not sure why, but it's one of those things you can't look away from.
There was a kind of morbid curiosity about it, I think, wasn't there?
Yeah. We were just talking about how he plays on trust, and like sometimes you think he's completely out of control, and then sometimes you think, oh, actually, he knows exactly what he's doing. And I enjoyed sort of coming in and out of feeling very scared for him, but also enjoying that he was obviously very skilled and knew what he was doing. Yeah,
he was, and he was kind of punishing himself, I think, by we weren't quite clear what kind of spirit or liquor it was that he was knocking back, but it was certainly having an effect, I think.
Yeah, I think it was whiskey. Yeah.
Okay, right. Yeah, it definitely wasn't anything soft. You could tell it was having an effect on him.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he seemed to look more nervous as it went on. So, but that was the fun part of it, I think.
And are you a B Festival regular, or is this your first time here?
This is my first time in Birmingham and at the festival.
Wow, so. a double whammy there.
Yeah.
How are you finding the festival and the city?
Well, I've only been here for about an hour.
Okay.
In the city, but it looks amazing. I'm from Leeds, so it feels a lot bigger.
It's always this tropical as well about Birmingham. The weather here is always fine.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping it will be, yeah. It's quite nice, yeah.
So are you seeing other days of the festival or just tonight?
We're here tomorrow as well.
Okay, and yeah. Are things you're looking forward to, or things you want to dabble with?
I'm just here to see whatever comes in front of me, I think.
Just soaking it all in.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that. I'll let you get back to, hopefully, what is it, still a cold beer?
I hope so, yeah. I've not even touched it yet, so.
Excellent. Okay, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers. If you've missed any of the shows to date, you can check out a complete audio archive at www.kingthebuttons.co.uk. And if you have an idea for a future show, you can get in touch via our blog, thenewcuriositiesbox.blogspot.co.uk. More now from the people. Right, so I'm hanging around the bar again, and I'm with Sam and Jahi, and I'm really keen to get your thoughts on what we've just seen in terms of the performance. Were you sitting on the edge of your seat like everybody else?
At first, I suppose. The first 5 or so minutes, I was a bit concerned about what would happen for the next 30 minutes. But I eventually realized that he was much more skilled than he was letting on. And I could sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
But it was definitely an alcohol effect. It was definitely a booze effect.
Yeah, but it wasn't entirely made clear that there was real alcohol. It could have been a magician's trick.
Okay. Jahi, what do you reckon?
Well, I was saying, it was sort of a short performance, so the upside is that booze doesn't hit you all at once, though it was quite a lot. But when he was doing the flips, that's before he probably was fully feeling it, those first couple of shots. So the most technically precise bits there, the flip, I think it was a good idea to do it right after the shots. Anyway, but this is very morbid, but I'm just getting to the age where some of my friends are starting to die, and anything can happen to anyone. And so I was feeling a little bit weird, just like, even I felt like he was very professional, very low chance of anything happening. But like, I don't want to be here for, I don't want to be entertained by someone putting themselves in danger, actually. Is that like my...
I get that. I think very clearly he knew what he was doing. And I think towards the end of the performance, the sort of routine with the knife, i.e., you know, sort of running it across the hand, trying not to stab the fingers, that's not for the faint-hearted. I've tried that with a pen before, and it hurts, I think, when you get it wrong. I've never perfected it.
Well, we're a little farther away from him, but it didn't look like he had any scars on his hand. He must have been practicing, so yeah. Apparently he's pretty good.
I think, like the guitar, it takes practice, doesn't it? You know, in my case, years. And are other things you've seen at B, or are you just here for this evening?
No, unfortunately, I've been busy this week. I just found out about it from Sam. I would have loved to have come to more. We were just talking about how this is the kind of space and artistry that we'd like to see more of.
Yeah, we just came at 7 today, but we're really impressed with the space, with the people, with the organization of it, with that last performance. I think we both really enjoyed. This is a really valuable thing that's happening here, and I'm sorry that I missed so much of it this week.
Now, you guys, you seem to have what I would call non-Birmingham accents.
Well, we are from Birmingham, so.
You are from Birmingham?
No, we're not.
Birmingham, Alabama.
I'm from Birmingham for all of a year now.
Okay, so where are you from originally?
We're both American. I'm originally from upstate New York.
Okay.
Which is in the state of New York, not New York City.
Jahi, what about you?
Chicago and then Detroit area in the States.
Chicago, the Windy City.
The Windy City.
So,
which is actually because of a senator from there, you know.
Because of politicians rather than breezes.
Yeah, it was a politician that was known as for being very talkative. And so he said, it's a senator from the Windy City. It's not actually, it's windy, but it's like
is
the 13th
that,
Windy
is that the
City.
Origin?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that origin.
Yeah,
story.
It's like, oh. Like the 11th Windy City
in the
United States.
Chicago,
it is cold. But it's because of the politician who was very,
black. I think there's a whole show in that, isn't it?
Yeah.
In its own right, probably.
Yeah.
So how do you find Birmingham as kind of culturally as a city in terms of the kind of, you know, arts and culture stuff that goes on? Have you been to lots of things since you've been here? Or?
Yeah, I've been to a couple of stuff in spaces in Digbeth.
Yeah.
I was living in Coventry for a while because I work at Coventry University. I've really enjoyed it. I think there's more space, a lot more art and stuff going on in Birmingham. I haven't really made enough time to go out and see it. I travel quite a lot, but I'm so excited to come here, and this is exactly the kind of thing I moved to Birmingham for.
That's reassuring to hear that. And I shall let you charge your glasses. I saw you trading for Karma earlier on, that important currency.
It is.
And until we go back in, central. We're queuing back, I think, now. But thanks for your time. Thanks for talking to me.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Pleasure.
Cheers.
Cheers.
And now for something homegrown from our own fair shores. Well, sort of. Paul O'Donnell took imaginations to another level with his one-man show fixated on a creative retelling of Bon Jovi's 1986 classic, Living on a Prayer. Armed with only a microphone, a wry smile and a golden voice, Paul coaxed festival-goers into a marvel of modern musical theatre. Once the crowd had died down, I caught up with him to get the lowdown.
I'm with Paul O'Donnell.
Hello.
Hello, Paul. And, Paul, you've just performed, I think, a miracle.
Oh, okay. Well, that's going on the flyers.
Yeah, that's going on the flyers. You've created a musical, okay, called We Got Each Other.
Yeah.
From the fine works of John Bon Jovi.
Yes.
But you created a musical on your own. You sat on the stage and kind of used people's imagination.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's the idea of the show, is that I couldn't afford any of the set or costume or cast that one expects of a full-scale musical. So instead, I asked the audience to bring that to life in their imaginations with the help of my descriptions of the show as it unfolds, and about 100 lighting cues that sort of highlight where people stand, and a number of cover versions of Living on a Prayer, which act as a score. And it's for the audience to believe in it and to bring it to life in their imaginations.
Now, the lady behind me, as I was leaving, she said, "Oh, how do you choose Bon Jovi?" And I thought, well, so the question I was going to ask you is why you chose Bon Jovi, but how do you choose him, I guess, is a better question, because there's a lot of potential, isn't there, I think, in sort of popular music, things that could be made into narratives and musicals.
First of all, I think it's sort of a crime that nobody has made a Bon Jovi musical yet. There's musicals for every artist going, but for some reason Bon Jovi hasn't taken off in the musical sphere. But why and how I came to choose that, really initially by accident. It happened as I started creating the show. It was actually a completely different show at that time, and the idea I sort of started with was trying to make it was called Beautiful, and it was aiming to make a beautiful show with absolutely nothing to look at, and that was sort of the concept I started with. And as I was creating that piece for a performance, I was looking for some music for an imaginary contemporary dance routine, which I would ask the audience to make, and was going through loads of tracks on YouTube and just happened to come across a trombone version of Living on a Prayer, and that became the overture of what the show is now, and it all just sort of transpired from there. And I sort of knew in my gut that it was the perfect song for this show, but I don't think I knew why at that point. But as it's developed, it's a song that is almost a musical in itself. Like, it's got this Living on a Prayer thing, which is that lots of musicals have that sort of feel of it. It's got some characters to play with, Tommy and Gina. It's got settings like the docks and the diner. So it had all the ingredients there, and it just, the more I sort of played with it, the more perfect it sort of became in the show.
Yeah, it's a bit like that other classic, the Barry Manilow classic, Coco Cabana. Okay, because that's a kind of, you know, that's a narrative, isn't it? And a big, long, kind of uplifting, fairly camp song, I have to say. You know, which is, the musicals have to have a bit of that as
bit
well.
Bit of camp.
So my next question would be, have you contacted John Bon Jovi with any interest in the rights for making this big time?
I'm not sure it's going to go big time just yet. We'll see. I'm going to Edinburgh this year, so to the Fringe Festival, and that's where I hope to get it a bit bigger than it is right now. I pay all my PRS rights and all them things, but I haven't been in touch with John himself, but he does get tagged in a lot of things on Facebook when audience respond to him, so he might know about it in his penthouse in New Jersey.
I think he's been in Ally McBeal, so I think that kind of sets the bar, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In some ways, but that might help, I don't know. Now let's talk about some of the language that you use in the performance, and this is going out to a family audience, and they'll be pleased to know there's no swearing or blue words.
Yep.
But you do have a masterful kind of grasp of Spanish.
Masterful is quite the stretch.
Yeah, I was quite surprised, Dan. In fact, the row of people in front of me who were in fact Spanish, I think, they were quite surprised as well.
Yeah.
You know, you're sort of San Miguel Solero Spanish.
Yes. I mean, that's sort of a big part of the show is sort of it not ridicules Spanish culture, but it ridicules our English idea of what Spanish culture is and completely parodies that. So the characters are complete parodies. Gina is always in a flamenco dress, for example, and the characters salsa dance across stage for no reason, really. And it's partly pulling out those things of musical theatre that, because I love musical theatre, but it is ridiculous. I'm aware that it's also quite ridiculous in many ways. And so I was really interested in playing with that through the creation of the show, the idea that I know I think it's wonderful, but it's also stupid. And that's where the Spanish parody comes out of it, because in musicals you have these horrific Spanish accents from people who studied at stage school in London, and that's fine, because you're just there to be swept away in this wonderful world.
There's also, I think, something very British about your show, which is, and you've touched on it, it's that kind of self-deprecation. You know, that kind of idea that, you know, the premise is almost, oh God, we've got to get through this. You know, it's kind of, it's a shambles, but a very, you know, one that's to be cherished, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
That's a kind of...
And that's what sort of, I think, seduces the audience into really going along with it, because they're not just doing it for themselves, but they feel like they're trying to help me out a little bit. Like, things haven't gone quite right, and I haven't got the 5 million I need to put on this show for real, but they're there to really support me and help me through it. And that's sort of the ethos of the show, is we've got each other, and it's really about us coming together to make this happen through our imaginations, rather than having millions of pounds spent on set and costume and cast and for you to just spectate it. You create it in your head.
So how did the show come to the Bee Festival? How did you get sort of selected or invited, as it were?
Well, I've come through a slightly different route to some of the other, most of the other acts on. So there's an Early Ideas program, which is on the Saturday of the festival, and it's happening tomorrow as well. And that is, last year it was three local artists. So I'm based in Coventry, so just next door. There's somebody from Leicester, and I can't remember where the other one was from, but the sort of award of that, and they were really early ideas, hence the name Early Ideas, and the winner of that, voted for by the audience, got the opportunity to come back this year as part of the main program. So it was sort of that way in for me. I got selected by the audience almost to come
popular
in.
Popular choice.
Yeah. So yeah.
Well, that's a nice thing, isn't it?
Yeah. No, yeah. The audience, it's nice when audience think, I enjoy this.
And how about you and the Rep? Because I know you've got sort of connections with the Rep as a theatre.
Yeah, so I was on the Foundry scheme, which is an artist development scheme run by Birmingham Repertory Theatre. And it's a year-long scheme for Midlands-based artists. And you develop through that year and create work with them for that year. And I did that in, I'm going to say, 2014. And sort of graduated from that, and they asked me to be an associate artist at the Rep afterwards, which is a wonderful title to have. So I have a lot of my work sort of starts here at the Rep, or is supported by the Rep in some way, and then I tour from here, basically.
Excellent. Now, just finally, there was one thing I wanted to ask you about the musical, which was the music itself. Was that stuff you commissioned, that people performed for you, or that you found? I mean, what I'm talking about is the Umba Umbas.
Yeah, so that they're all finds which I have commissioned for off the people from YouTube who have created it. So it took a lot of searching for. There's thousands and thousands of versions of Living on a Prayer in very different forms that are on YouTube, and I spent ages working with them, and so they're all found. Versions, and that sort of became part of the stimulus of the show, was these are the versions of Living on a Prayer, and I was sort of working out how they could shape a scene or how my idea for a scene can fit to that track or work with that type of music. So they weren't commissioned at all. They, in the ethos of the show, they're very much beg, borrow, steal.
Harvested from the collective.
Yes.
Is that a way to look
that
at it?
That is a nice way to look at it.
Well, listen, Paul, it's been great to talk to you, and I wish you all the best for Edinburgh.
Thank you.
And I should thank you as well, because now I have that tune stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Probably for at least another week.
It's been in my head for about 2 years, so I have little sympathy for you on that one.
That's great. Thanks.
Cheers.
And now it's time to close the box on this special from Bee Festival 2018. My thanks to the performers and festival goers, and to Catherine and the team at the Birmingham Rep. Bee Festival is supported by Arts Council England, Jerwood Charitable Foundation, and a number of European embassies and cultural institutes who are committed to celebrating European arts. For more information, go to beefestival.org. The New Curiosities Box is written and presented by me, James Sandy, and is a King of the Buttons production for 107.5 Switch Radio.